Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to our show of Wealth Makers and Dream Makers. We are thrilled to be back in studio today with a new episode of the Zandbergen Report. As your host, I'm proud to bring you the movers, shakers, and difference makers who are passionate about sharing what they have learned and what they need to know today. Today, I'm pleased to welcome back in studio my trusty partner, Letitia Bourbon.
Hey!
Fish, welcome back. Paul, nice to see you again.
I love that new opening.
Me too.
It summarizes so well what it is that you do. Wealth makers and dream makers. You're both of those.
That's right. And speaking of wealth makers, we are going to continue our conversation on last week's discussion of the SECURE Act. Super, super sexy, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yes.
So I'm going to let Letitia kind of summarize what we talked about last week and then preview what we're going to try to finish up on this week.
Yeah, I think that's great. So again, the SECURE Act was a last-minute deal passed December 20th, 2018. So what does that mean? Not a lot of people are buzzing about it yet. And so you're going to start hearing it more in the news, and you're going to hear about it in the paper. And people will start talking about it as they start to learn more. So that's why we want to make sure that we are here to you guys right in the very beginning of the year with updated information so you guys have good decision. You have information to make good decisions. So the definition of the SECURE Act is setting every community up for retirement enhancement. That's the definition. And if it actually does that, not sure. But
did you come up with that yourself?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
That was the Department of Acronyms in Washington.
Yeah, they've got
big
some
department,
good ones.
Yeah.
They've got some good ones.
They go by some acronym. I don't know what it is.
So, one of the things that it's a big one. So if you're getting ready to... you've already maybe retired or going to retire, and you're around the age of 70, and you've worked for a traditional employer, you have this thing, it's called a retirement plan, and at some point in time, you have to take an RMD, which is a required minimum distribution, and we talked about it last time, so I don't want to go into too much depth, but before, you had to take the money.
Wait, let's ask Paul. What age, Paul? What's the old age?
You can put me on the spot. All right, so the old age was you had to take it out 70.
And
half.
Half.
And now it's 72 and a half?
No, just 72.
Just 72.
Okay. You can wait to take it
close.
To 72.
Good, Paul.
Yeah,
good.
Which is great. So,
but you know what you did? You led me to call up my financial, my little accountant, and
oh,
go
that's
through.
Right.
Because I had an amount, a little inheritance, a small amount.
Yeah.
And I was just going to take the whole thing out thinking that, hey, you know, I don't have to face, or I was actually holding.
You were trying to defer it.
Yes, I was trying to defer. I'm sorry.
You're inherited IRA.
And
what'd you find out?
You made me. Yeah, he said, well, yeah, they're supposed to have told you this.
And, yay, we were right.
You were right. Yeah,
I love it. That's great news.
So even they didn't. Nobody notifies you of these new laws. That's the whole point.
No,
they're supposed to, but they
correct.
Don't.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to give you guys a date. Write this down. July 1st, 1949. If you were born prior to that date, July 1st, 1949.
Don't look at us, Tish.
You are still...
don't look at anyone else in this room here.
You're still subject to taking your RMDs no later than April 1st of 2020. So that's this year, guys.
And RMD is?
Required minimum distribution.
There you go.
So that's...
No acronyms here. We're trying to get away from them.
So yeah. Born before 1949, 70 and a half rule applies.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the date. We're going to have it on our website. Paula, if you're listening, this is the date you want to put on here for someone to reference later on. And so you guys can go back to, if you want, like the cliff notes, this will be part of it. It's just one of the things that you'll want to know. Another really cool thing is you can now, we didn't talk about this last time. We kind of just went big picture and kind of dived into details. But I just want to make sure you know, so retirement accounts that count, for example, would be like a 401k, a 403b, a 457, and traditional IRAs, so or rollover IRAs. There's a lot of names, but if I rattle off one of the acronyms that you're like, oh, that's me, then this applies to you.
See, some of those names come from the Department of Numbers, not from the Department of Acronyms.
Right. There's quite a few. It's a lot to get. It's confusing, but you can always just so you know, you can always reach out to us and we can help you. And we know we have clients that listen as well. So we talk about this with our clients of updates and changes. And you should always bring this up to your CPA and advisor just to make sure that you're on track when you're doing things appropriately. Like Paul here, he had to go and find out for himself because he heard from us. And then he should have been doing it the whole time.
We just saved Paul thousands of dollars.
This show's free for the next year. Here.
Yes. Yay. I have that on record. Paul, make a note again. another thing is you can do now with the new changes is you can contribute to your traditional IRA after age 70 and a half. So, which is really cool. It allows you to continue to contribute before.
Now, say that again, because I thought once these things you got to 70, you were done. It's all just withdrawals.
Correct.
Because I say all the time, lucky us, we're going to live to be 95. The good news is we're going to live to be 95. The bad news is we're going to live to be 95. You know, so, and some of us are going to still be working into our 70s or whatever, and we'd love to continue to contribute tax-free for a later day.
See, I love this. Paul's getting all excited about our show today. I'm loving it. So,
it may not be sexy, but it is. It's the kind of really important stuff that nobody talks about.
I'm the nerd that gets really geeked out about this. I'm like, hey, we're just saving you money or giving you more tools in your toolbox to play with. So
do you
that
like
makes
stop people at the supermarket line and start telling them about the Secure Act or something?
I mean,
don't make
taxi cabs, maybe.
Don't make me tell you about our Uber driver.
I actually do.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I want to serve and help people, and so...
That's a story for another day, Paul.
We're going to keep on going. We're going to keep on going. So, yes, Paul, you're right. So you can contribute to your traditional IRA after you are 70 and a half, and that's beginning 2020 tax year. So it's really cool.
Well, when would you have to start taking out at 72 then?
Yeah, RMDs, you have to start taking out
so
at 72.
You could be taking some out, but if you wanted to be... And the reason I guess I'm thinking is because you're living longer, you want to be... deferring the taxes for some reason if you're still working and
you might have a lower tax bracket. And this is not a change, but on the along the same lines is letting you know, like, if you are not the owner or 5% owner of the company and you're just employed and you're like, hey, I don't want to retire yet, I want to keep on working for X amount of years, you don't have to take your RMDs from your 401k if you're still working past the 72. So
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's still a part of the rules, but that's no change. It's always been there.
It's always been there. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway.
Why does nobody ever tell me any of these things?
I don't know. You never knew us before, maybe.
That's it.
I was going to say you had the wrong advisor.
I know. I was going to say, Paul, when are you going to change advisors?
That's clear. That much is clear.
We're already giving you some great advice. I love it.
Half the people out there are nodding, going, yeah.
Exactly.
If they're not with you, they should be. All right, go ahead.
Exactly. Okay, so the next big change is they call these inherited retirement accounts. Sometimes people call them stretch IRAs. They have a lot of different nicknames, but... something to know is there's been a big change there as well. We talked about it last time, but just to go through it quickly is at, Paul, what's your wife's name?
Jan.
So, you say you have a retirement account and you pass away, it goes on to Jan. Jan can still continue to take RMDs based on her life expectancy. But after Jan passes away, what's one of your children's names?
Vanessa.
So say Vanessa. I'm not saying that this is their specific deal, but just
I'm
as an example.
Nothing. I'm eating it all up. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, but say there's like $10 in the account when Jan has passed away. And so Vanessa is now inherited. So this money of $10, she will have only 10 years to take all of the RMDs out of her account.
Oh, that's right. They're forcing you to take it out. So
correct.
So under current things, you could, over your life
you
period,
can stretch it.
Yes, but the stretch is now gone.
And right.
It's a compressed time period. Because why? Because they want to get you to pull it out and they want their taxes now.
Yeah, that's correct. Okay. Now, the thing is, it's not so this is great. We have a client that I spoke with the other day, and his unfortunate family member passed away the very end of the year, and we opened an account and rolled funds in, and I got to share the great news that he was grandfathered in, and
you just made it.
And this, exactly. So the stretching was able to maintain for his lifetime, but anyone starting from January 1st, 2020 will no longer get that stretch.
Now, for my daughter, that may not mean much, but for many of your clients, somebody's going to inherit millions of dollars. Now you're forcing them to take it out over a 10-year period.
Yeah.
That's a much higher tax burden, I would think, than if they could spread it over 30 years, 40 years, whatever, something.
Exactly. But here, Paul, here's the thing is I'm not going to tell you the secret right now, but there's already tools.
I'm not going to tell you.
There's already tools in place to be able to, if you have a situation, we could talk about another show, that help you make sure that you can implement tools to be able to maintain your family legacy.
This would fall under advanced planning, which we don't have time for today.
Correct.
But there are some
Tuned.
Those multi-million dollar IRAs.
Stay tuned, folks, because there's, right.
How do you like that for a tease? I'm learning.
Yeah, there you go. See?
Yeah.
Podcast game.
Good. Stay tuned. You'll hear more later. Okay, cool.
All right.
So that's kind of the summary of what we talked about all of last time. So
that
we
was
have
a
some,
long summary. It was half the show.
Yeah, well, you know, it's still really, really important because if you don't get it, you know now. So that's the most important part. So there's also some additional changes. So there's a new adoption and birth expense that's been able to be written into the law. So the law now allows penalty-free withdrawals from retirement plans for birth or adoption expenses up to $5,000 limit, which would apply per parent, including those who have adopted the child. So that's really cool. So basically, if you're a couple, you guys can take out $10,000 from your retirement accounts as long as you guys both have separate accounts in your own names. You know, pros and cons. I'm a big fan. If you have retirement accounts, leave it for retirement. Big fan. But good thing to know is you can still take the money out, 10% tax penalty free. But whenever you take money out of a retirement account, you still have to pay the taxes because you have deferred them over time. So there's still a tax portion that you could pay.
What do people usually take the money out for? I would think house or health.
Yeah, house, health, and education.
Education,
those are some of the ones that, but now there's just one more. So that's kind of a cool little extra add that we like. Also, Bert, do you want to add anything else so far? Or you want me to just keep on going?
I think you're on a roll.
Okay, cool. Okay, great. So fun. If you are part-time and you're working part-time, there's a new rule that's affecting you. So if you are working part-time and you have worked at least 500 hours for 3 consecutive years, you are now eligible.
500 hours in a year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. For 3 consecutive years, you're now eligible for a 401k plan. So this might not qualify for a lot of you, but there's some people that work part-time and a lot of times they get excluded from the employer benefits because they don't work enough hours to be able to qualify. So this is one way for the government to be able to try to encourage people to save for their retirement and not just rely on Social Security. As
can I ask
we all
a really
know,
dumb question?
Pension plans have
and
gone
I should
down.
Know this, but I really don't. Maybe others like me don't. What's the difference between an IRA and a 401k? IRA is an individual retirement account.
Yes.
And that's something usually your employer sets up for most people, but although you can do self I don't know what's the word is, but you can set one up for yourself under something. Here's what a 401k is. It's just a self-directed IRA.
Good, Bart.
So, Paul, the difference is an IRA is set up by an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And a 401k is set up or sponsored by an employer.
Correct. So the opposite of what you said.
The opposite of what I said.
So very similar. Very similar in the tax deductions. However, a 401k has a much higher contribution limit than an IRA as well.
Yes.
So two different, and then I know there's other ones out there because you threw this other
457, 403B.
Roth, IRA, and all these other crazy ones. How many other variations on a theme are there here?
Dozen?
Yeah,
there's
quite
many?
A few. Yeah, there's a lot of options. Depends on if your employer offers it. And
because you only ever hear those two. You set up an IRA, I guess, which is a personal choice.
Yeah.
And then you set up your company if you're employed by somebody else. Quite often offers a 401k, usually in lieu of, instead of paying you a fixed retirement income for the rest of your life like they did in my dad's era.
And it depends. Like, if you work for a government agency, they don't call it a 401k. They call it a 403b. So it's similar.
Just to be different.
Just to be different. And then there's 457. So there's a variety of retirement plans depending on your employer. So you don't really have to worry too much about the different plan options. A lot of times,
I'm going to tell my wife, we don't have to worry too much. Letitia told me, we don't have to worry.
Saving. I didn't say about saving for it. About saving for it.
Wow. I feel better already.
No. But there's incentives for small business owners. That's another new change, which is kind of cool.
Okay.
Good and bad.
Tell me that. I'm a small business owner.
Okay, there we go. So what they want to do is they want to be able to provide more 401k retirement plan options for employees. So say, do you have an employee, Paul?
No.
No. Okay. Well,
part-time. I have part-time employees. I'm not a full-time employee.
Okay, those are still employees. Or okay. If they work 500... Here, Paul, listen to this. If they work 500 hours for three consecutive years, you now have to provide them an option to participate in a 401k.
You have to. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So see how I flip that?
Yeah.
If you are a participant, you're eligible and you get to, and then as an employer, now you are obligated.
Have to.
So some of the other incentives are basically they want to be able to make it easier for employers to give 401k as an option. So now they're going to be able to have people create groups together and be able to offer 401k plans as like groups, different company owners together to try to reduce their costs.
I never heard of that. So if
eligible.
There were other businesses like mine, do they have to have some similar business model, or just any, I can go down the street and go up and down the hall and say, hey, let's all form a co-op here.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's been clarified yet.
No. Yeah. It's new. So I don't know if they have the regulations on what that looks like.
You're throwing on all sorts of interesting tidbits here.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I ask, here's another dumb
Tish's
question.
Tish's tips.
Tish's tips. We should do that every week. Tish's tips. I like
do.
That. And we'll end with Tish's tip of the week. That would be a cool idea, actually. I know the government spends a great deal of time and energy, and they must think they are explaining this and sending it out to the public. Yet I'm going to guarantee if we walked up and down the hallway of this office building today and this office tower that we're in, not one person would know about what you're talking about here unless they had their financial advisor was sharp like you guys and just gone through it. But by themselves, I don't think most people are well informed about this. Do they go through any great effort to explain all this, or do they just publish the rules and then hope there's somebody like you to interpret and explain this stuff to it?
I think a lot of people will start to get the information or bits and pieces as people like us advisors start to write about it, talk about it, and educate people.
Because clearly the media used to play a role, but the media
they
has
will.
Shrunk. And
yeah.
You know, we don't have as many business publications, for example, or business channels like this.
They still will. You're going to still hear it, but you have to subscribe to them.
Right.
So the business channels are definitely starting to highlight some of this.
I did read about that right after your show. You beat them to it, but I read in some publications online, big articles, secure. I said, I know what that is now here.
Yeah.
And I think also, I don't know what the percentage of people who are employees versus self-employed, but a lot of the employees are counting on their employer to communicate, because a lot of these are from based on employer-sponsored plans.
But I don't know the number, but I'll bet that the number of self-employed people or partly self-employed people, the gig economy world is growing, and the number of employed people, I would dare say, is probably going down. I don't have any proof of that, but that's my feeling.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
Something interesting to add, you know, Bart and I differ on this, but something
food fight. All right, I'm ready.
Yeah. So there is... there's a new provision that allows annuities to be sold on 401k platforms. And
say that again. So they sell it as part of a 401.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a 401k from my employer, I can buy an annuity, not just stock or
correct.
Bonds or whatever I could
correct.
Buy previous.
Correct. Yeah, there's new provisions that will allow.
Bart's it's like, giving you the evil eye. I'm
yeah, yeah. Yeah, they can offer annuities as part of your 401k.
So like they have done in 403Bs.
Correct. Okay. Now they're offering it in 401K.
Okay.
403B is what, the government one again?
I guess it's public
employees.
Public employees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. so you could buy, and they're giving something else you can buy with that 401k other than stock.
Stocks and bonds, mutual funds. Yeah. So it's actually like instead of working with, you can still buy those. Actually, you can buy a lot of the same instruments, but think of it as a different tool. Instead of working with an advisor like us, you can work with an advisor like us. And then instead of maybe having an account at Schwab, you can have an account with an annuity company.
I wish you would do another show on annuities, because annuities used to be a hot topic in my father's era, and they seem to have gone cold. And I don't know if that's a real strong reason for that. Or
I don't know.
You don't have to deal with it right now, but I'd love to hear about annuity. I know there's another non-sexy topic, but raise your hands if you want to hear annuities. I do.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it.
Because the idea is that they produce income. You know, there's some insurance aspect to it, and then it... And that's what I'm interested in. And so many of us, as we retire, I'm interested more in the income for life, because I don't get an income for life. I don't have a pension plan or whatever.
We'll put that on the docket. We'll have a show on it.
I'm putting in my 2 cents for that one.
Like it. So another thing that you're going to see probably a lot more annuity marketing is because under the SECURE Act, there's actually some new laws that are going to allow a level of exemption for some of the fiduciary requirements on the employer. So they haven't like really written out all of the details on that, but just letting you know, just be slightly cautious as they, you know, we're trying to figure out what all the details look like. But
so the employer doesn't have to have the same fiduciary responsibility to give you all these warnings or tell you stuff here? And some aspect,
some level of exemption. It's what they're talking about. So again, we're waiting for all the official rules and regulations to come out. I don't want to say that that's like a all the details on
all the more reason people have to tune in each and every week to this show, because it's a moving target. It really is.
Well, you know, so the thing is what happens is they pass these laws and then they go back and say, okay, great. What does that actually mean? And how are we going to make all the details work, you know?
Or the lobbyists get involved and start tweaking it, or the courts get involved and start interpreting it.
Yeah. Exactly. So there's modifications after the fact. But yes, that is one of them. Bert, I keep on going. You're almost out of time.
Yeah. Keep going.
Okay, great. Okay, I'm going to just keep on going.
He's happy to let you just run with this
one today. I know, exactly. Okay, so another thing is the 529 plans have changed. So you have new provisions with 529 plans. So
what's a 529?
What's a 529 plan?
So a 529 plan is an account specifically set up for those who want to fund for higher education.
Oh, yes.
Higher education means beyond.
We did a show on those a long, long time ago. People setting aside money for their kids' education. There's some way to do this. You should do a show on that, because that's another. I never heard anybody talk about that one. We only ever did one show on that years ago.
Yep. So there's some nice benefits. Money grows technically grows tax deferred. If it's used for higher education expenses, the money comes out tax free. Mm-hmm. So really, really cool.
Yeah. So the two new changes. There was a change last year with 529 plans in general. You were able to take up to $10,000. For lower education. So before, it used to only be higher education. What I mean by that is college years and beyond. Then lower, this is not the SECURE Act, this is just a FYI change. Last year, then you can go to private school and your kids are in elementary school. They can take up to $10,000 per child.
It's gotten expensive in these private schools. Oh my goodness.
Exactly.
I'm a good Irish Catholic. We were talking about my little grandson going to first grade until I found out it's $1,000 a month to go to first grade at a Catholic school here locally.
I know. Well, hey, here's
back
a good thing. As a grandparent,
right?
Do you have grandkids?
That's what I'm saying. One grandkid. And we started I went to Catholic school as a kid, and I thought, well, all right, maybe we'll, you know, encourage our daughter to send her to Catholic school. Ain't wrong.
You had a 529 plan and you wanted to give your grandchild $10,000, you can now pay towards a loan. Say they were in school and they had a loan, you can now pay in their behalf up to $10,000
from the 529.
From their 529 plan.
So tax-free money to pay off.
Another show.
A loan.
Another show. 521. There's one.
But that's
nobody
part of the SECURE. But that's part of the SECURE Act. So that's brand new.
Okay.
Brand new. So,
I'm feeling more secure already just listening to this show.
Yeah. Right. You're so funny. You're hysterical. You guys are laughing at me. I feel like I'm just saying.
Well, you're so excited about it, and you should be, because there's a lot in here. Right.
So on the way here, I was talking to a colleague, and he was going on and on about his new Tesla, and what he loved about his Tesla is that he could work while he was driving. So he had his laptop. He could do all those things because the car was on
sort of take your hand off a little bit.
But you had every once in a while, he says, every once in a while, if you're on the freeway going around 70, about every minute you have to touch the steering wheel, let it know that you're still there.
Oh, okay.
If you're stuck in traffic, you can go 3 or 4 minutes. That's me today on this show. I'm touching the steering wheel like every couple of minutes.
I'm Jenny Tesla.
It's on autopilot. And guess what? We just reached our destination. I'm fresh. I've got a lot of work done.
You didn't have to drive.
So great. Wait, I have two last little tidbits.
Right, real quick.
You got to go fast.
Wait, I got this. Okay, wait. What counts as income? Two more things. One thing to know, now they're saying stipends and non-tuition fellowships now count for income for IRAs.
We don't know anybody.
Oh, that's good.
No. This is a really good thing. Yeah. So if you are going to medical school and those doctors make you stay your fellowship for like a year, say that you're there for like a year or two, and you're working, you're like, hey, wait, what is this income I'm getting? I'm not able to contribute to my IRA. Now you can. So this allows them to kind of save towards their retirement and kind of help out. And then the last thing is also foster parents will allow difficulty of care for payments now count as income. So anyway, throwing that out there is there's some new changes.
And that's a good one because I actually am, well, there's another show someday. My daughter was from foster care, so we adopted out of foster care, and there's not enough provisions to help provide incentives for people to adopt the 500,000 kids that have nowhere to go.
And now they have, like I said, in two provisions here, they have for children for that.
Good for them.
Yeah.
All for that.
Yeah.
So I'm putting my hands back on the steering wheel. I'm taking over the show.
Those are all the facts.
All right, Leticia, thank you so much for running the show today. Those were really, really, really good points. And there's, as time goes on, we're going to continue to talk about this, not as specifically as we have over the last couple of weeks, but we do have an attorney guest coming in about a month, I believe, and we're going to dive into the estate planning portion a little bit more. So this will be ongoing. Thank you for all your help, Paul. Thank you. Thank you for everyone who has tuned in, and we look forward to being in studio next week. Cheers.
Thank you.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Leticia Birbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.